This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Sandman TV Talk. That's right, we got a TV Talk here podcast, a full one, the full enchilada, talking about the entire season that is Sandman. I'm Bo.
And I'm the full Morpheus, because you said the full deal, like the full Monty. It's the full Morpheus.
I like it. That's an eternal, wait, are they the Eternals, the Immortals, the Everlast, what are they called?
The endless.
They're the endless.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
What if I told you that I am the King of Dreams, Neo?
Different Morpheus. However, this did end on the Catrix. So, in all fairness, there is some.
that's true.
Overlap there. Yeah.
What if I told you that I was captured in a basement for 100 years, Neo? That's why I couldn't find you earlier.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway. Oh, man. No, this is great. We're going to be talking about The Sandman. This is a celebrated graphic novel that neither you nor I have read. But I got to tell you, after watching this series, I cannot wait to pick it up. I know that it has been tried to be turned into something, a movie, a series with various individuals attached to it throughout the years. But now we finally have it here on Netflix. And I mean, not to tip the bean can here or anything, but I think they nailed it. I mean, this was fantastic.
Oh yeah, I loved it. And now to be fair, Lucifer the TV show was based on the Sandman Lucifer, correct?
That is correct. And actually, we're going to talk about some of the decisions in casting and kind of twists with Lucifer and Constantine in particular. That is definitely going to be a topic of conversation. But overall, before we dive into that, I'm very curious. What is your familiarity prior to watching this with the character of DC's Sandman?
So I had very limited knowledge of the character beforehand. One of my roommates several years ago did have like the Sandman omnibus. And so I saw a couple stories here and there, and I really liked the art of the graphic novel. I thought it was beautiful. But as far as the character and the stories told within that omnibus, I was very unfamiliar. So I knew Sandman was a dude. I knew he was the King of Dreams. And that was about it.
All right. Fair enough. My familiarity with the character goes back to like I was going to say the original, but that's not actually true. The original Sandman actually appeared. It was a Jack Kirby character. And it was back, I want to say, in the 70s with kind of a costume very similar to what we saw in the dream sequence of the young boy in this particular series. But which was a great nod to that character. But I remember specifically the one where the version of the character where he was wearing the fedora, he had the gas mask, and was kind of going all about the place. When I heard about this Sandman, I remember when this graphic novel came out and people were talking about it, I remember seeing it and being very confused because the look of Morpheus is very different from everything I had known at that point about DC Comics Sandman. And that's part of what made the series so incredible is that it completely took like a name, a recognizable, relatively recognizable name in DC Comics at the time and completely reinvented it totally.
Yeah. So I didn't know about the Silver Age and then the like noir version of Sandman. I was only familiar with Neil Gaiman's representation as we see it in the show.
Right. As kind of like dream embodied. And I think it's one of these situations where you have somebody with a creative vision that takes things in such a different direction and just completely tells their own story and makes it work so well. It reminds me to some extent of the reimagining of Green Lantern and just how like the original Golden Age Green Lantern and the Silver Age Green Lantern are completely different and share almost nothing in common, and how confusing that was for a lot of people, but also how incredible it was that reimagining became the iconic Green Lantern that we know today. With there still being a lot of love for the classic Golden Age version of the character. So anyway, all that to say, I have always known this was a graphic novel to pick up. This was something that you know was widely celebrated. It's kind of like, look, if you like comic books for grownups, right? It's not just for the kids, all right? Like, if you're looking for something that has got a little bit more of a Watchmen-esque, you know, not talking down to you, but specifically kind of getting into kind of some grittier material, some more thought-provoking material, then you've got to read Sandman, and specifically Neil Gaiman's Sandman. So, haven't read it yet. Definitely going to read it. That was my knowledge of the character going into this, and I was very much looking forward to seeing how this was done. And yes. Okay. DC Comics, DC Universe, we all know that they've been having some issues right now. We're not going to go into some of the decision-making process over at DC with what movies are still coming out and shouldn't be, and what movies are no longer coming out but should be, or any of that, or what's going on with HBO Max, or what does that mean for Harley Quinn or all the other DC shows out there. We're not going to talk about any of that right now. We're just going to talk about Sandman and how this was incredible. And yet, was there missed opportunities in this? Bell, you've already made mention of the fact that the Lucifer that we've seen before from Netflix, by the way, because Netflix acquired that show, is based off of the same character from this universe, from this comic book. And that is absolutely true. They made some choices with this reimagining of the comic book. For example, we have two characters who, you know, we have seen very recently on screen, of Constantine and Lucifer, both portrayed by phenomenal actors who I think it's safe to say, I mean, and no disrespect to Keanu Reeves, but like two of the best like interpretations of these characters. Like, they embody the character. It is a perfect mirror merger, whatever you want to call it, of character and actor. Think Tony Stark and Robert Downey Jr. It just makes sense. It fits together like a glove. And they made, I think, the very bold choice in Sandman to go with kind of a gender swap for a lot of different reasons. But I think one of the most benefit is, if you're not going to get those exact same actors, then you got to go completely different. That's my thought. But what about you?
Yeah. So that was the thing that I had a question of. So was Constantine, like the Hellblazer Constantine from the comics, was that created by Gaiman in Sandman?
No, I think Constantine predated Sandman, and they just used that character in Sandman.
Yes, but there is another Joanna Constantine, the past version, the 1800s version that we meet right in one of the episodes. That was from, I want to say that was original to Sandman, but I'm not 100% sure on that. But yeah, when you're talking about from the.
The Constantine. All right, so the actor that's playing Constantine, I'm blanking on his name, but he's fantastic at the part.
Yeah, so like, you know, that started in the, was it NBC show and then came to Legends?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Matt Ryan. No, not Matt Ryan.
Matt Ryan is... It is Matt
No,
Ryan.
It is Matt Ryan. Yeah, Matt
yeah,
Ryan.
Yeah, it's Matt Ryan. Yeah.
Matt Ryan. No, of course it is Matt Ryan.
I knew that the whole time. I was just testing you.
Yeah, there we go. No, but Matt Ryan is great. He's great as Constantine. Everybody loves him as Constantine. And like, he's like the guy that wouldn't die. You know what I mean? Like a series gets canceled, then it comes back. Then it gets canceled. Then he pops up on Arrow. Then he's on Legends of Tomorrow. Then he's in Crisis on Infinite Earths. Like, he's all over the place. And I was like, it's interesting because I love Joanna Constantine. What they did in this series, like, I love her character. It's the spirit of Constantine. It's the exact same vibe. And I think she did a fantastic job with it. And I almost want both of these characters to exist in the same universe. And like, you know, maybe she's like the daughter of like the John Constantine that we've known from all of, you know, these other series. And I want this to be connected. Is it so wrong that I want this to be connected?
Yeah, I think it would have been, I would have, you know, peed my pants in excitement if Matt Ryan were the Constantine in this show, and that they got Jenna Coleman to play the 1800s Joanna Constantine.
Well, I'm not even opposed to her playing a modern Constantine, or even like a, like, you know, the great thing about DC is when they build up their legacy characters, and then you have kind of, you know, a generational growth of these different legacy characters and everything that's there. So I think like having like a Joanna Constantine in a modern context, because again, she was fantastic as that character. I just,
yeah,
really,
she did so good. That's yeah. the thing, right? Is like, you know, at first I was kind of like, oh, they're gender swapping this Constantine. I was like, but Matt Ryan. And then I watched the episode and I saw her portray the character and I was like, okay, yeah, she's got it down. She understands.
She was perfect. Yes.
She did the homework. Yeah. And so I was like, okay, well, I can't really be mad at that. And then cause I was looking at it and cause I didn't know about the 18th century Joanna Constantine from the comics. And I was like, are they taking like what was the source material here? Like, is this the actual Constantine that I'm thinking of, or is this like a different creative choice where they're bringing a character from blah, 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 blah. And so like, that's when I found out that there was an 1800s version and I was like, oh, okay. I see what they're doing here. That's neat. But I couldn't really be mad at that because I thought Jenna Coleman did a good job as Constantine as well. But I mean, I don't know. Matt Ryan is you know, my Constantine. So.
Oh, don't even do that. But I hear you. I mean, I get the sentiment behind it. So again, you know, the other one that we have to talk about, of course, Gwendolyn Christie, fantastic job as Lucifer.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That was the scenes between her and Morpheus were just incredible. And she, yeah, she's always very like, you know, her presence is just, is this air of like superiority with her as Lucifer is really, really good. I thought she did a great job.
It's that combination of power and beauty that you want in a Lucifer character. And there was a very darker twist on the, you know, there was a very darker take than the Lucifer, obviously, that we know from the series from, you know, eventually it was on Netflix. I'm trying to remember where it was originally when that show was coming out, but
was it not CW?
Maybe it was CW. It was very CW there for a minute. So it's very possible that it was the CW. But of course, the Tom Ellis version of Lucifer would have felt a little weird here. But at the same time, I do think it would have been cool to bring him in and give him a very different Lucifer to play because it's a multiverse. You know what I mean? Like maybe this Lucifer, I mean, obviously this Lucifer is much darker, is wanting, you know, isn't in that kind of like post. Well, actually, have you watched Lucifer at all?
I haven't, but it was on Fox, which explains why it was canceled. Because
yes. That's how you know it was good, because Fox canceled it. Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now Lucifer was great. It was a fun show, and you know, they did a lot of really kind of some crazy stuff with the lore and everything, and you know, by the end of it, like, dude, can I tell you and not spoil it? I mean, this is going to spoil Lucifer. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, well, suffice to say, Lucifer goes on a hero's journey and is very much the hero of that show, right? And by the end of it, the entire like cosmos is kind of reorganized to the point in which if this was going to be a shared universe or like, you know, if this Lucifer was going to be the same Lucifer, it wouldn't make sense because he wouldn't be at that stage in the game trying to conquer Earth/heaven. Like that's not his play where we leave Lucifer at the end of that series. I think that's the best way to say it without spoiling what happens.
Okay, and, so Tom Ellis is at like his portrayal of Lucifer is at a point in that character's arc where Gwendolyn Christie's Lucifer, their personalities wouldn't fit.
It's not even the personality. Like yes, the personalities is here's the thing. I'm not even concerned about the personality difference because I think that it'd be fun to see Tom Ellis play a very more malicious Lucifer. And again, you know, it's that beauty and power. Tom Ellis embodies that as well. Like he's got that kind of presence and everything. I think he could do it quite well. So it's not the personality point. It's literally the like the cosmic geopolitical struggle between heaven and hell looks different by the end of Lucifer than what is described here in this show, if that makes sense.
Okay. So yeah. So the, there were some treaties between the warring nations of heaven and hell. And so the geopolitical landscape is just slightly different. Yeah,
exactly. They'd have to do a lot of like, you know, some bending over backwards and doing some, you know, crazy spaghetti noodles to make it all work out. But again, it would have been fun to see Tom Ellis do that. That being said, I feel like I need to like just voice this desire to see these two actors who like really just did a fantastic job with those roles, and wish that they could be part of this, like far as much fun as the shows and the franchises they were attached to were. Sandman is so much better. So much better. And so it would have been so really good. Cool to see them plugged in here. That said, I cannot deny that Joanna Constantine, or Constantine, if you will, and Lucifer of Hell, Brienne of Tarth, is absolutely phenomenal character. So anyway, that's the big one. I wanted to talk about that first. I know that the funny thing is they're both side characters, and the way that this entire story is structured, and I love the fact that each episode is kind of self-contained even as the series goes along. What did you think of the structure overall here with Sandman?
So it was interesting, right? Like, I will just go ahead and say right now that episodes 5 and 6, two, like, I guess you could say, quote, bottle episodes, that were, well, I guess five is connected to the main story.
Well, no, let's talk about it. Like, 5, that's the diner episode, correct? This is your favorite 24/7, episode of the series.
Well, 5 and 6. I mean, it's kind of hard to pick a favorite. I think, I don't know. Yeah. 6 was also very, very good. I really liked 6.
Okay, remind
me.
Okay, let's see. Now I need to look up the episodes. Remind me, which one was 6?
Sound of Her Wings. That's the one where
that was my favorite. The death episode.
Yeah,
yes.
The death episode. Exactly. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, it came directly after episode 5. Episode 6 did. So just to clarify that for you.
Thank you for
that. It's the one that came immediately after it, you know?
Yes.
As far as chronologically in the episode count.
In succession. Got it. But yeah, okay. But yes. So the diner and the death episode, those two episodes, I think universally has got to be celebrated as two of the best episodes in a really fantastic series.
Yes. And so, you know, I really like the first episode, how it set everything up. And, you know, the always plays a great villain.
Your boy from Harry Potter.
No, not your boy from Harry Potter. Your boy from Game of Thrones, Tywin Lannister.
Oh, him. So him at the top of the show. I thought you were jumping to the diner, but yes.
We're talking about the story and the chronology, right? Like, episode 1 set everything up. Really, really enjoyed that one. Then he's getting his stuff back. Those stories were okay. So he's getting the things back that were taken from him. A Hope in Hell, that was the last piece that he had to collect. And episode 2 and 3 were okay. Episode 4, Hope in Hell, like that fight with Lucifer was great. Love that bit of it.
You know, the fight with Lucifer reminded me a lot of Sword in the Stone, Disney's Sword in the Stone with the wizard battle.
I have not seen that movie in ages, so.
Okay, so the it's the witch and the wizard, and they are each turning into creatures to fight each other, and they're taking turns. It's literally the exact same concept.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I was less interested in Morpheus collecting his items than I were at some of the other things that that happen in those episodes.
Right. The backdrop was almost more fascinating than the story.
Yeah. Especially like the challenge between like Lucifer and Morpheus, you know, like that was really, really good. Great lines coming out of that one. 24/7, like, you know, this is the last piece that he's trying to collect, but that diner, it was just so awkward and so like visceral, and just it was incredible. Like, just one set this entire episode, and there's so much going on in it, and it was just so interesting and just such a great character study of all these people in there. Like, these are people that, like, in that one episode, they've done more character development than, like, you know, some TV shows do in an entire season.
I know, you're right. And it's wild, because like, you're spending time with all of these characters who by the end of it are going to be dead, you know?
Yeah.
And like, you know, you're not even with your main character except for like 5 seconds beforehand. And I remember early on thinking like, oh, okay, so we're doing this. We're like diving in with this whole backdrop, and you get it, right? You get that we're about to participate in a thought experiment.
Yes.
And the further you get in, the more, I guess, like you said, awkward, off-putting, uncomfortable it becomes, and the more, like, it's just chock full of great moments and great little, I mean, like, the acting and all of this, with all of the casting in the series as a whole is phenomenal. But like that one sequence, man, or that entire episode, you're right, it was incredible. I was going along with it. I thought the whole argument of, is it like, you know, like, is the world really better if everybody just told the truth? is that true? And then the question of what is a lie and is a dream a lie, and like all of these different kind of thought exercises. I was down with it. I enjoyed it. And I, even the uncomfortable nature of things, I enjoyed up until people started like cutting their hands off and nailing themselves to boards. And like, I was like, oh, okay, all right, we could see the bone. All right, I'm good. I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah. I figured you wouldn't like that bit, but like, you know, it plays into exactly the point that Dream's trying to make, right? That, you know, if you're not stripping, like lies out of these people, you're stripping their dreams out of them. And then this is what the base of humanity has left without their dreams. And stuff like that. And so it's just this, you know, this visceral, carnal, disgusting aspect of humanity that's just laid bare when their dreams are taken from them, right? And so, yeah, like, you know, it didn't have to be so terribly gory and violent, but, you know, I think it kind of, you know, nails the point home.
It worked for what it was. I do understand it. Just for me, I couldn't stomach it. It was like, okay,
yeah,
I need to know if this is going to be this series. And then, like, you know, the perfect marriage of these two episodes, I think, works really well, because the death episode following was very different. It was almost like the comfort of death after the kind of total depravity of humanity. And, you know, these two episodes working, you know, right alongside each other, I thought was really, really good. But I want to I want to dump more into the next episode, but I want to stay here for a second. Tell me more about this, man. Why did this episode speak to you?
I mean, it was so different. Like, you know, you had this chronological kind of story, and then we see John, and also I will say that the bit with John and the woman driving him, like I guess the Good Samaritan or
yeah, that was intense.
Oh, super, super intense. And then, like, you know, this episode just takes that, because, like, you see that, and it's like, you know, he doesn't do anything to her. He gives her the amulet of protection, and you're like, oh, okay, well, you know, maybe there's something to him. Maybe, like, yes, he did kill those people when he was escaping, but they tried to harm him, and he told them not to. And, you know, maybe there's something in his weird logic and thought process of the universe that will make more sense when we see him more. But, like, no, it's laid bare right in front of you in episode 5, where it's like, you know, it's certainly not like he's not who you think he is. he's not just trying to, like, you know, make the world better by making people be, you know, be honest and for that honesty to, like, become, like, coming from a noble place, right? Honesty doesn't always come from a good noble place, and
that's,
I think,
right,
we kind of saw that.
He sees himself as the anti-hero, right?
And
it kind of, you know, you skip ahead to the end when Dream is talking to the serial killers at the freaking serial killer convention, which is a fantastic concept and horrifying. You know, when he basically says, like, I am taking away your ability to lie to yourself. Like, that's what he essentially does to the serial killers, what, you know, John wanted to do to all of humanity. And the idea was like you know, all of the justification that you tell yourself that makes all this right, I'm taking this away so that you have to deal with the reality of that. And, you know, the twist, of course, is that John was justifying everything that he was doing because he would, you know, in his own mind, hated lies. And as long as he could remove, you know, if he removed lies, and that was the justification so that everything horrible that happened, he wasn't the one that was doing it. And so I think that it's funny how that moment mid-season really kind of plays in so many different ways to the end of the series. Man, I want to talk about the death episode, but first we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back to talk about that and just kind of the series as a whole as well. Keep that going. We'll be right back. More great TV talk up in just a few minutes, but first, we got to pay a few bills. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
And we're back. Haha, that's right. Told you we would be. death comes for us all. And may she look as beautiful and be as kind as the death that we see here in this world. Early on, when we first meet Death, we don't know who she is. We know that she's one of Dream's siblings, but it's never quite clear up until it becomes very clear. Belle, did you pick up on who she was pretty early on, or was it kind of a surprise when it was revealed?
I misread the Ankh. I forgot the Ankh in Egyptian mythology was for, is it Osiris? It's the god of death, souls in the afterlife and stuff. So I wasn't entirely sure, like, who she was. I was thinking maybe she was like love or something like that at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
When they go to the old man's house, I was like, well, maybe he's lonely and she's going to, like, you know, bring him some kind of comfort and love, but no. But it was very strange seeing an interpretation of death like that, you know, a comforting aspect, and like, you know, like she says, you know, after years and years of doing this, it's just all the people need are some kind words and a smiling face, you know. And that was super, super cool.
It was very amazing. Very It was amazing to see her, like, the love that she had for humanity, too. Just even just kind of like walking down the street and having interactions with people that were not about to die. And just kind of, you know, really embracing kind of the precious moment that she gets to have with all of these people. And, you know, with, you know, like, you know, the old man, it's sad, but it's also kind of like, you know, he's lived a very full life. But then you see, you know, the younger guy who's out on his honeymoon and he's worried about, you know, the plane tickets on his phone. And, you know, I feel like I can kind of relate with that, because I always feel like, okay, if I get in a car wreck, you know, like, somebody's got to pick up the kids from school, and there's, like, you know, like, there's things that have to be done. And the reality is we never get that choice in terms of when we're going to clock out. And even with the baby, when she just picks up the baby, every parent's, like, absolute worst nightmare of, you know, your child just dying in cradle for no reason, which happens. And, you know, she just says to the baby, like, hey, that's it. Yep, that's all you get. And it's like, man, it's so sad.
Yeah.
But it's also, there's a preciousness to it as well. And I think the way they, you know, showed that was really great. And I love that they juxtaposed that in the exact same episode with this concept of a character who cannot die, and
yes,
what his life experiences are. And that no matter whether or not he was on top or at the lowest low, he was like, no, I want to keep going, you know. And I think at the beginning of that episode, they really showcase the beauty in death as a natural part of life. And as sad and as tragic as we feel, you know, the embrace of that inevitability, there is a beauty in that. And there is a comfort in that. But then also juxtapositioning, like, with the human spirit and, like, the human, like, drive to survive and thrive regardless of where you're planted or where you are, or what, you know, whatever hand you're dealt, at any given time. And just that constant, like, you know, the heart keeps on pounding and not wanting to give up. And I thought that was really amazing how they explored that in that episode.
Yeah. You're right. Like, the juxtaposition there of, like, you know, death killing people, even a baby right here. And then
death wasn't killing. No, she wasn't killing people.
She was taking. Yeah.
She was meeting them at the end of their life.
Right. Death meeting people at the end of their life. You know, we have the whole gamut. We have an old man, two young men, and then a baby. And, you know, yeah, the difference, you know, there, and then her granting this man the ability to live forever, with Dream, you know, cynically thinking that, like, no one would want that. And then he's like, yes, of course. It's like, my wife died, my kid died, everything was taken from me. And Death's like, well, or Morpheus is like, well, surely you want to die now. And he's like, no, there's so much more to do. And like, right. And he's just like, what? Right. that was so, yeah, it was very, very interesting. A look there, and it's I don't think it would have worked as well had those two stories not been sandwiched in that episode together.
I agree. It worked out so well. All right, let's talk about the villain here with the Corinthian, an absolutely terrifying, charismatic a serial killer, a nightmare that got away. He was an interesting foil for not necessarily for Dream. But for Rose, who ends up being this, I think they called it the vortex, and where all dreams kind of circle it, she could kind of consume all dreams, and all dreams kind of came towards her. And it was almost like this weather pattern that had to be dealt with, or like this, this natural occurring oddity in all of existence that occurs from time to time that Dream has to, get rid of because it could destroy an entire universe. And in fact, in the past, apparently, it did destroy an entire universe. And so, we're kind of with this morally gray situation where we find this girl, Rose, who we like very much. She has her brother with an extremely tragic situation that she's trying to find and rescue. And then at the same time, we know that her very existence threatens all of reality. And so, what'd you think about Rose? What'd you think about, the way in which we see the Corinthian kind of play into all this? Was he a satisfying villain? Was Rose, was she a villain? Was she a hero? What are hero? What are villain? in this? What are your thoughts, man?
Well, the Corinthian was interesting, right? Because like, he wasn't a, yes, he was a villain. He was a bad guy. He was a nightmare that had overstayed his welcome in the waking world, where he did not belong. And, the speech at the end, I think was satisfactory, right? Like, yeah. Dream's conversation with him right before he destroyed him was, not that he was angry with him, that, he didn't wish to punish him. He wished to uncreate him because he did such a bad job. Like Dream took that on himself because it was his creation. Right. And so, right. The whole point of Dreams and Nightmares is to inspire people. And he wasn't doing that. He was killing them. I think he's interesting, right? Like, he likes his freedom. He would rather all the worlds be destroyed than for him to go back into the endless. But I feel like he's less of a character, he's less like a character than he is an opportunity for Morpheus to grow. Yeah.
To take ownership, kind of like his own agency. Cause I mean, like, that's the thing, right? Morpheus goes throughout this entire series depressed and emo, which, okay. I see it. I definitely see it. And so having him kind of re-engage with existence in kind of a meaningful way and not sleeping his eternity away, so to speak, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because it's interesting because like this whole, the characters mentioned it a couple times where, Dream has, or Morpheus has, grown and changed and like his original idea was that your fate is your fate and you don't know there's no opportunity to change, but you had the nightmare who was taking care of Jed. I keep on wanting to say Jeb because Jeb Bush, but but like you
please
know like please clap. Yeah, it's interesting because they're very similar kind of characters where the Corinthian was kind of latched onto that aspect where he's like, I'm basically driving the ultimate change in these people by killing them. and then,
right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Gosh, what was her name? The nightmare.
Gold.
Got tired of it and was like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to inspire people by scaring them. So I'm going to inspire them by doing good stuff. Being kind and showing them kindness, especially to this particular child who is having a horrible, horrible childhood.
Yeah. And can we talk about this real quick though? Cause I think Gold was especially interesting the way that they really, as much as she hated her job, they also portray or explained like, no, nightmares serve a very important purpose because without them, people can't confront the unconfrontable in their own world. It gives them a place to process the unspeakable or the terrifying. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. And it's just a fascinating concept, right? I never really thought about nightmares like that.
Yeah.
It just makes me want to read the comic book even more. Because Gaiman has some really, really interesting concepts that he's raising in this, and they definitely came through in the show. A lot of times you'll see some of those, you know, adaptations and whatnot will sort of like, you know, lose the forest through the trees or whatever it is,
right,
you know.
Right. Yeah.
I don't feel like that at all in this.
No.
Yeah. A lot of super interesting concepts, and so yeah, like the Corinthian and gold are kind of like, you know, opposites of one another, where they took their purpose. Two different directions, where gold had more of an understanding of what her place was and what she wanted to do, but the way in which she was doing it was an affront to her, and she was tired of it and like didn't like causing that pain. Whereas the Corinthian just indulged in it and loved it,
right?
And
yes.
And again, that was the failure on Morpheus's part, and that speech that they have at the end there, kind of like, you know, close that up. And so I like the Corinthian as kind of like, you know, the kind of like the final step that Morpheus needed to take to like fully grow there at the end.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. He was pretty cool too. Like every time he come on screen, I was just nervous that like, like the house sitter that was house sitting for Rose. I was like, oh man, this guy's going to die. Like,
this guy's going to die. Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, you're cute. I'm like, nope. Uh-uh. Like, oh, and then anytime anybody got like all like cutesy with him, I'm like, you're asking for it. You literally he's got serial killer vibes. Come on, people.
Yeah, like the social worker, you know, and stuff like that.
Social work. When you think the kid gets the message off, but then you find out that
you know,
she's about to die, and then not only that, but like she never even got the message. Like that was
so tense.
That was awful.
Yeah.
That was so frustrating. Yeah.
And so, but, you know, yeah, go ahead. I don't know. I don't know. It's kind of weird to talk about the Corinthian, because like it's almost like he wasn't really a fully fleshed out character, but his purpose there was to drive the growth of Morpheus.
Well, and I think that's fine, because ultimately he wasn't, you know, our quote unquote big bad. He wasn't the one responsible for everything that was going on. He was kind of playing the game along with it. When it all comes down to it, we find out that our kind of primary villains are Despair and Desire, these two twins that have it out for Dream, but we don't know why. Now, you know, I've already mentioned like the casting is incredible, and they got the same person who did
in Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah, in Cowboy Bebop.
I don't recall the character name in Cowboy Bebop. But
okay, I can't remember. But there was a lot of complaint about that, the take on that character in Cowboy Bebop, and how it completely like, you know, I mean, there's a lot that could be said about some of the choices made in Cowboy Bebop.
That's very true.
Right, but here we get a chance to see this person really shine, and I'm blanking on their name, but really fantastic as Desire. We didn't get a lot from Despair, although she was insanely creepy, and the whole cutting herself thing was highly uncomfortable.
Yeah,
highly uncomfortable.
Well, the only real indication that we get that the reason why they're mad at him is Desire says at one point that, you know, oh, Morpheus thinks his domain is so much better than ours. But I get the feeling there's something a little bit deeper than that. It's not just...
Right. Yes.
Yeah. But I feel like if we get a season two, that's what they're going to explore.
Well, but it's all a metaphor. I don't know if you picked up on this, but it's definitely a metaphor. Like, so I guess the question is, what is it about our desires and our despair that would want to eradicate our dreams or overpower our dreams? Is it that our dreams get in the way of what we actually desire, or what actually causes us, or do dreams cause us to desire what we can't have, or to despair? You know, like, I feel like there's got to be something dreams, like that.
Yeah. Like dreams are an escape from despair. Yeah. Or perhaps, dreams cause us to desire things, and so therefore the dream is what causes the desire, not the other way around.
The power that desire or that dreams have over our desires and over our despair.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I could see that.
I
thought it was cool that their realm was a heart as well. Like, you know,
a big giant, like golden humanoid form in with the heart in the middle of it. I thought that was like really super cool looking.
Yeah.
And then the nice curved and red and glisteny. Yeah, that was a really cool set.
That was great. Looking forward to seeing kind of how it all plays out and as that gets explored and what we hopefully will get as a season two. Fantastic series overall. There's so many different characters, so many different messages throughout. It's impossible. You know, it's the downside to doing a binge watch and then talking about it on a podcast because you really can't do this series justice in just one podcast. And yet here we are. Any final thoughts though? Anything else you want to make sure to kind of cover before we close it down?
Yeah, I didn't realize this until I was looking at the Wikipedia page, but Mark Hamill was the voice of
Is the Pumpkinhead. Dude.
Yeah. And I will say that as soon as Gilbert came on the screen, I was like, that dude's a dream.
Oh, yeah. Fiddler's Green. That's from a song, right?
Fiddler's Green?
Fiddler's Green is a place I know well, where a fisherman goes when he don't go to hell. The lakes are all something and the something is free. I can't remember the way the song goes, but it's something like that.
Yeah, I think it's Irish folklore, right?
It must be.
Like you said, it's really hard going into this series and trying to do the whole thing at once. there's so much to talk about. I mean, like each episode could demand, you know, an hour long podcast and stuff like that. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I will be honest, like I love the first episode. Two and three, I was kind of like, oh, okay. And then when four kicked in the rest of the season, I was like, this is incredible. And then of course we got but this show goes to 11, little extra bit at the end there, like Dream of a Thousand Cats. That was really cool. The animation in there was really neat. Mm.
One of the muses.
Calliope.
Something like
that. Yeah. That was an interesting story. And that was the post episode 10 dream. We got to see, you know, there has been a change in him, right? And because, you know, that was another episode where they mention it. And so, you know, we got to see all this growth of Morpheus and, it was just super, super cool. I didn't really know what to expect because I haven't really read the source material. There are a lot of people online who hadn't seen the show complaining about stuff because it hadn't come out yet. And I hope they saw it and they got what they wanted out of it. But yeah, I've just been inspired to read the books now. And I think that's what any show could really, you know, ask for that's adapted from another source material. So it was fantastic. I thoroughly enjoyed it and I would highly recommend it.
The actress that played Rose, Simunye, I want to say. Not 100% sure. Terrible with names. Anyway, she's relatively new. Like, I think she was pretty much kind of unheard of or unknown prior to this. And she has got
great.
She got a great career ahead of her. This was a good one. This was like in terms of like your first outing, this is a major home run. So looking forward to
it. Yeah, she did really, really good.
Yeah, seeing more from her. All right, well, there you go. It's a 5 out of 5 for me, Doc.
5 out of 5, yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. Go out and see it. You're going to like it if you haven't streamed it yet. We've just spoiled everything for you. Maybe not. No, we did. We spoiled everything. Enjoy it. It's so good. Belle, the folks can follow us. The folks can follow us. They can find all of our information and such on the TVTalk.fm. You're getting some great stuff coming your way. We've got some minis heading your way for House of the Dragon. We got some minis heading your way for She-Hulk. Belle, you want to give a quick what your thoughts on She-Hulk was? Are you a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
I'm a thumbs up. I'm excited to see where it goes. Honestly, I was super sad that the first episode ended what it did. I was like, come on, give me some more. I like this.
It was short, like, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was super short. Like, that was my biggest complaint is it's too damn short. Like, give me more episodes. Drop two. Yeah. If you're going to do that, drop the first two. Come on.
Well, we'll have the She-Hulk mini headed your way right before episode 2 comes out, and then we'll have them pretty much the next day from that point on. So look for that heading your way. And until next time, for me, from Belle, from Belle's mom,
Captain America,
we'll be back in a flash.
Hi, Mom. Sorry, I had to get in there.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.